Welcome to Cloud Cover. My name is Chris Reisner. Today I'm joined by Nick Harris.
Hi.
How's it
going?
Nice
to meet you, Chris.
And also our special guest, Yavor.
Yavor, yeah.
Yavor, how do you say your last name, Yavor?
Gurgiev.
Gurgiev? Maybe one day I'll remember that, hopefully. So what are you here to talk to us about today, Yavor?
So we're here to talk about the new mobile services support for .NET backends.
Fantastic. I think this is a very long-awaited thing, so people are going to be really excited.
It's the top thing on our user voice, so people have been asking for this for a long time.
Awesome. Yep. Well, I know you've got a lot of content to show us today, so why don't we dive on in?
Sure. So, of course, as usual, you get started in the portal for mobile services. So I can go new and then pick create and then pick the .NET backend down here. It is preview right now, and we're hoping to GA, in the next 6 months or so, but right now it's preview.
When you say .NET, is that all-encompassing? What languages are supported?
Right. Currently, we support pretty much any .NET language, so you can do C#, you can do VB.
Okay.
The quick start is in C#, but you can bring whatever language you want.
Okay. I know Chris is a VB.NET fan.
I am a VB.NET fanatic.
So you're sorted now.
It's the number one language, if you ask me.
Definitely awesome to see that it's there. Finally, and a lot of people will be rejoicing and partying in the streets.
Absolutely.
So let's check it out.
So I've already pre-created one of these services here, and you'll notice it looks very much like a regular mobile service in the portal. Mm-hmm. We have quick starts here, so I can go ahead and drop in, download my starter project, and this is going to contain both a client project and a server project. Using .NET, so I can go ahead and do that, but I'll skip it for now. The other thing I want to point out is the data tab and the custom API tab are now gone, because now you do all that development in code and in Visual Studio, so you no longer need to be writing code in the portal.
Okay, excellent. Everything
else is largely the same. If we go over to the push tab, you'll notice that we just launched our integration with notification hubs. So by default, you actually get a notification hub provisioned with every mobile service.
Excellent.
So this is kind of much more scalable, much more robust, and it's pretty much going to be the default going forward for all mobile services.
Okay.
But back to the dashboard. So I mentioned the quick start. We can download the project. I've already actually done that. So I have it over here. I'll go ahead and extract it and open it up in VS. So like I mentioned, you'll see we have two projects, the client and the server project. And so for now, we can just focus on our server project here. The first thing you'll notice is that the runtime is now available as a NuGet package. So if you look at our long list of dependencies here, you'll notice this Windows Azure Mobile Services backend package, and then a bunch of others for our different data providers.
Okay.
But that's pretty cool, because that means you can actually run the whole thing locally.
Right. So, are we talking? Do we still need to console.log this stuff, or we got like full debug F5 experience?
No, we have everything now. You get IntelliSense. You get local debugging. You even get remote debugging, which we'll show in just a minute.
Great.
The other thing you notice here is we're built on top of a lot of community pieces. So we're pulling in Web API. We're pulling in Mongo. Like we haven't reinvented the wheel this time. We're trying to build on top of what's there.
And where you're pulling in Mongo, the quick start, is that utilizing Mongo, or it's just there to we can do this?
Yeah, it's just there for convenience right now, so you can easily get started with Mongo, but the quick start by default will use SQL.
Okay.
So when you provision your mobile service, it creates a SQL database in Azure, and that's what it uses by default, similar to mobile services today.
Okay.
Great. So I can go ahead and build my project, and this will kick in with NuGet package restore, bring down all those packages. It can take a minute, since we have about 35 packages in our solution. But when it's done, it's just pretty easy to hit F5. Let me actually set a breakpoint here so we can see it in action. So I'll go ahead and set a breakpoint and run this. As it comes up, we see our new landing page here with a nice smiley face, and you can actually play with this as well, which is pretty cool.
Okay. And
over here we have our help page and our test client. So if I pull this up, it'll show me documentation for my mobile service, as well as let me test out my API. So if I go over, for example, to Git here, I have the equivalent basically of Fiddler or Postman right in the browser, so I can very easily fire off an HTTP request. And to Web API developers, this is probably very familiar. So there you go, we hit our breakpoint as expected. And then we can just go back to the browser and we will get our response. So here you go. We got our first two items that we bootstrapped our database with just coming through. And the nice thing about this is you'll see that the wire format is actually exactly the same between the .NET backend and the Node.js backend. So right. All our existing clients continue to work.
Excellent.
Great.
Great. So let's go back to VS, and actually we can set the client project as a startup project, and we can just validate what I said. So this is our Windows client. So
it looks familiar.
Yeah, definitely.
You've seen that before?
Some killer UX here. And there you go. We got our two items. We can add another one. Works as expected. So all our existing clients should work.
Yep.
Right now in the portal, you'll probably only see Windows and iOS, but going forward, we'll add basically all the ones. We're just going through and making sure all the edge cases are ironed out. They should largely work, but just making sure.
Okay, so
fully ready.
That piece was the quick starts that you can download today.
Yep.
You know, for the C# backend quick starts, we've got the client components for, what did you say, Windows Store and
Windows Store,
iOS.
Windows Phone and iOS.
Okay, and the rest are coming.
If you do the iOS one, are you getting your Visual Studio project for the back end and then your Xcode project for the front for the client?
Yeah, exactly. So usually you'd be doing that on two separate machines.
Right.
Or you actually publish your mobile service to the cloud, maybe test it out locally with a test client, publish it to the cloud, and then just hit the cloud instance from your Mac.
Great.
Okay.
Yep. So we're still running locally though, so let's actually go ahead and publish this to the cloud. I'll add one line here so we can see our logging working in the cloud. So we have this services object that lets you do logs among other things. So we'll do just a hello here. Okay, so with that, let me just build and I'm ready to publish. So now to publish, this is very similar to Azure websites. You're gonna have to download a publish profile. I already have that. I've already downloaded it. It's just sitting right here in my downloads folder. If you're looking for where to get it in the portal, it's actually linked right off the quick start here.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also in the dashboard. There's another link, so easy to find. Let's go ahead and publish. So instead of going through this Azure, the Azure subscription in portal, I actually just download the publish profile directly.
All right.
And picks up my web deploy settings. Now the key thing here is if we want to do remote debugging, which we're going to show later, we actually don't want to just hit publish. We want to actually go to this next page and make sure we set the debug configuration so all our symbols are published as well.
Mm.
So at this point, we're ready to publish. And if we're lucky, this is just going to take a few seconds to get the files deployed to the cloud, and we should see our service.
So what are we deploying to here now? I guess historically, we were writing Node.js scripts. Mm-hmm. They were running in some runtime.
Mm-hmm.
Where is this, the table controller that you've just published up in your services project hosted or sitting? What's going on there?
What's the hosting environment?
Yeah.
So it's running essentially in the same container that Azure websites uses today, but there's a little twist. We actually don't host the exact same runtime you're looking at locally. We host a slightly different sort of cloud version of that runtime, which has a few important tweaks. So it's got different security settings. For example, the help page is turned off by default.
Mm-hmm.
It has some of the connection strings for SQL and notification hubs are injected. Things that are specific to the cloud environment, pretty much. So it's kind of a cloud version of your runtime. That's hosting your code. The other nice benefit of that is that it lets us actually do patches without you having to redeploy your code. So we can just rev the hosting tier with non-breaking changes and bug fixes, and you don't even have to redeploy your app. So we're kind of getting a little bit in the business of being an API host. So we're hosting your API and providing that as a service.
Okay,
great.
So I'm running in the cloud now. Let's go ahead and try out.
Remote debugging.
Yeah, let's try that. So let's do that. Let's go ahead and attach our debugger. So we'll go to just the debug menu here, attach the process, type in our mobile service name. And now I need the credentials to be able to connect to that service. So they're actually in my publish settings file. And I actually conveniently have it open here. So I'll take the username, and it's important to start this off with a slash, because sometimes if you're on a domain join machine like myself, it gets confused about who the user is.
Okay.
And then here's my password.
Okay, and I'll write that one down.
Absolutely.
Mine's usually just 1234, so nice work.
Yeah.
It's the same thing, it's just Base64 encoded or something like that.
No one would guess.
So there you go, my debugger is attached, and I'll pick the W3WP process up here.
Okay.
And now I'm attached. So now all we need to do is actually hit this with an HTTP request. And then let's actually not forget to set a breakpoint here. So I'll actually fire up another VS instance, and I'll start off my client project. This way we can actually show you what do you need to change in the client as well. So if I head over to my app.xaml.cs, you'll notice that by default when we ran it locally, we've hard-coded the local host connection string.
Okay.
But if you're going to talk to the cloud, we really just want to comment out this constructor here. And then this is the correct connection information for the cloud. So this will hit our cloud instance.
Okay.
So let's go ahead and run that. And we should hit our breakpoint in the other Visual Studio instance.
Very cool.
There you go.
So you're remote debugging on the deployed mobile service. That's an important distinction to make.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. And the way I can prove that to you guys is I can actually go and access some of these cloud environment settings. So we have a services property which gets dependency injected, and that's the thing I mentioned where some of the connection strings get included in the cloud. So if I go and start crawling through these settings, you'll notice basically somewhere in here, I have my application key, my master key, and these are things only the live service knows. Yep. Somewhere in here, I think we do have my service bus connection string, my SQL connection string. So that's kind of proof that we're actually talking to the live cloud instance.
Okay.
Great. And then I just want to touch on this log entry here. So the logs tab in the portal actually continues to work the way it has so far. So if we just head back to the portal and go over to the logs tab, that services.log call that I inserted actually has resulted in this log entry here.
Okay.
So as usual, you can remote debug, but you can also, as usual, come back to this logs tab and look for errors or messages.
Now it looks like there's a number of other log statements in there that are kind of unusual. Are those related to the deployment?
Yeah, this is basically, some of this is, maybe at this point we're being a bit too verbose with our diagnostic information, but we're telling you pretty much every step of us loading your app. The hope is that we'll make it very easy to debug if something goes wrong.
Yep.
Great.
Yep.
Okay.
Great. So that's kind of the first lap around the .NET backend. Now, there's a couple of things we can drill down on. We can talk about the different data stores we support.
Yep.
And also we can touch on auth and push.
Okay. Sounds good.
So
we'll do a big lap around the service project, I assume.
Yeah. Let's start with that. So we'll go over to our service project here. It's already open. So let's talk about the different artifacts. So we already flashed some code in front of you guys, but I haven't actually talked in detail about what these things are. So the main artifact you're going to want to learn about is our table controller. And that's what lets you do that very simple canonical CRUD scenario with mobile services. You'll notice I have a table controller and I have a model. So that's my to-do item here.
All right.
And the key thing that I set up in the table controller is a domain manager. And the domain manager is our abstraction that tells us how to talk to different data stores.
Okay.
So entity domain manager is pre-configured to talk to entity framework. We also have one for table storage. Mm-hmm. We have one for MongoDB. So your controller itself should stay largely unchanged. You just have to swap out the domain manager depending on which data tier you'd like to use.
Okay.
Great.
So in this case, I'm sticking to SQL. And then these are sort of canonical CRUD methods.
Yep.
If you're a web API developer, this is very much familiar to you.
Yep.
So that's really the big thing you have to learn is this table controller and a domain manager. We have very little surface area in addition to web API.
What about our data model there? Is there anything unique we have to do to that?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So our to-do item is very simple. So we call this sort of a greenfield scenario where you're starting from scratch. So I can go and take a look at the to-do item. And it's basically just has a text and a complete. It has a base class called entity data, and this is, I can go into it. You'll basically see it has some of the system properties mm-hmm. and mobile services needs.
Yep.
You know, clearly we need an ID. We also, you know, need some additional properties for mm-hmm. things like optimistic concurrency.
Okay.
For now, you don't really need to worry about those. Just inherit from the base class. Or you can actually copy these properties over on your type and okay. use these attributes, and it should also work.
Okay.
But that's the pretty simple case. I also, you know, if you look back at here, you know, I basically have a cloud cover context, and this was generated for me, and this is pretty much a straight up entity framework context that you'll see here.
Okay, yep, DB context and DB set in there.
Yeah, the important thing is basically us setting this magic connection string, which makes okay. sure when you deploy to the cloud, the SQL database that we provision actually is connected to this mobile service.
Right. Mm.
So we wire up the connection string. That's pretty much the important thing here.
Okay.
Okay, so that's kind of the getting started with Entity Framework. Now let's show a scenario where we're actually bringing an existing Entity Framework model that may right. be actually quite a bit more complex than mm-hmm. than kind of the greenfield right. that you're seeing here. So actually, I have a different VS project pre-configured.
So what would the scenario be here? I've got some code that I've already written. I want to leverage the benefits that mobile services gives me. Perhaps I'm just going to go and pull that data model into a mobile service.NET
exactly.
backend, or how's that?
Exactly. The scenario is basically you've invested already in a entity framework model. You already have an on-premise database, maybe mm-hmm. serving an internal line of business app,
okay.
and you just want to expose that to mobile clients.
Yep.
So it's very easy to kind of write a bridge layer with mobile services that lets you do that on-premise model without touching your existing database and expose that to mobile clients.
Okay.
That's what we're going to show here. So if I have a few things in this project. It started with the same quick start download, but I've just added a few things, so I'll just walk through those. Here's my existing entity framework model. So I have a customer and an order. And you'll notice the order basically has a reference to a customer.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, that's a relationship, and that's something that's potentially very common in these existing sort of brownfield scenarios, what we
right.
call. Mm-hmm. The tricky part about this is the mobile service clients are pretty simple. They don't understand mm-hmm. the notion of relationships. So we need to have a way to map this to a simpler wire representation.
Right.
So we use a framework that's very popular called AutoMapper
mm-hmm.
that lets you do this mapping. And again, we've taken a community piece off the shelf and integrated it instead of building our own thing.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll notice I have a mobile order type, which is kind of the flattened, simplified version of this type. So you'll notice mobile order just has some of the properties and it only has the
right.
customer name. It doesn't have that complex relationship.
Yep. And inherits from entity data, which we saw earlier.
Exactly.
Okay.
So where does this mapping actually happen? In our web API config here, you'll notice this mapper initialize call, and this is actually AutoMapper.
Okay.
So it's pretty straightforward to tell AutoMapper, you know, go ahead and map back and forth between order and mobile order, and this is basically the mapping you need to follow, which properties
okay.
map to what properties. And this is really powerful because, again, you can reuse your existing context that you have without changing it and just kind of add this as a layer on top.
Okay.
So I've exposed my model now as this mobile order. Let's look at a controller that's using it. Oops. Go mobile order controller. So you notice again I inherit from table controller, but this time I had to write my own domain manager.
Right.
So that's kind of again that same abstraction. So for a existing data store, I actually implement my own domain
yep.
manager that knows how to talk to my existing context.
Right. So is there an interface or base class that these domain managers need to implement?
Yeah, you can take a look at this implementation. It's actually very straightforward. For this, I want to use the mapped entity domain manager.
Okay.
That's our base class that negotiates the mapping between an order and a mobile order.
Okay.
So this is pretty straightforward. And this is pretty much passed through to the context directly.
Okay.
It's a very, very thin layer. So I can go ahead and run the server project. And now we're going to see this mobile order controller.
All right.
That's talking to the existing SQL backend. So if I head over here, mobile order, and I can do a get, and I should see a handful of items, and they should have that simplified schema that we defined
yep.
With AutoMapper. If we're lucky. There you go. Right, so a very simple wire representation that our clients understand.
Okay, so that there's a little bit of code there, but that's a very common thing that people do when they're building out a solution that needs to, you know, some form of entity serialized over the wire. There's normally some form of stripping out those properties that are actually within your backend data store that aren't required on the clients to minimize traffic, but also perhaps to reduce the complexity of the model.
Exactly.
So that's something people do day in, day out with typical service implementations.
Yeah, and we've just kind of first classed it and created a pattern around it so people can just easily know what to do. That's why you'll see kind of there's an explicit distinction between the models folder here and what we call data objects.
Okay.
So data objects are these simplified wire representations, whereas models can be arbitrarily complex.
Okay.
Great. So we touched on using an existing entity framework model. Now let's talk about using a NoSQL store. So something like table storage or MongoDB. So in this case, I've picked Mongo. And again, we start from a type. I mean, it's managed code after all, so you have to have a type.
Yeah.
So I actually have a Mongo to-do item, which is literally the exact same to-do item we were just looking at, except it has a different base class. Instead of entity data, it inherits from document data.
Okay.
And document data knows about this the NoSQL store and the kind of things it needs, and it has different notions of IDs, et cetera.
Would you use the same document data if you were going to table storage instead of Mongo?
I believe so. I believe it's the same base class. So we go ahead and change the base class of our to-do item. And then we can write a controller that's also, again, very similar to the controllers we've seen so far. Again, it's a table controller, except this time I'm swapping in a Mongo domain manager.
Okay.
And this one I didn't have to write. This one is in the box. I just give it the connection string to my instance. The rest of the methods, again, stay the same.
Excellent.
Yep. So I can go ahead and run that.
Only a couple small changes, and you're able to basically swap out your data store.
Exactly. And that's where we want to be. We want to give you one place where you can write your controllers and your business logic, and the data store swapping is just sort of almost a config thing. You don't have to rewrite from scratch every time.
Okay.
Yeah, so I can just hit the Mongo store as well. Pretty much the same as what we saw already, and that's the way we want it, because our clients, again, understand the iOS client, our Android client, they all understand this wire format, so that's the key in doing this mapping. So I'll get a list of a single item in my Mongo database.
When it comes to doing the actual querying of the data, since Mongo and table storage don't necessarily support all of the same sort of queries that SQL storage does, is that kind of surfaced inside of the code here? Like you would be limited in what you can write there?
Yeah, that's a great question. So let's go back to our original controller, this using entity framework. And so this query method, you'll notice, has things on it, like I can go and write, like a complicated where or something like that. I have full SQL access here.
Right.
If I switch to the Mongo one, of course, we don't have that kind of flexibility. So it's actually just a much more simplified set of operations I can do here.
Okay.
Right.
So that's kind of where you'd see that difference is, if you're using sort of a very small subset of queries, it should stay pretty consistent.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you'll get a lot more power if you're using Entity Framework
or a
relational data store. Great. So that's kind of our support for different heterogeneous backends, and that's new. We couldn't do that with Node.js, and now we can do it with .NET. So we're pretty excited about that. The other thing I want to touch on is actually auth and push, which is kind of bread and butter for mobile services. They're kind of these key verticals we try to do. And so for a change, actually, I'm not going to show a table controller.
Okay.
I actually want to show this with just the regular web API controller.
Okay. Which is, if we're talking the old type of concepts that we had, or still new and existing, still existing, not new, but, we had the CRUD operations and the scripts which could execute inline for that. That's sort of similar to the table controller implementation we just saw. Whereas API controller, anyone who's built something with web API understands that. And that's sort of similar to custom API.
Exactly, yeah. And the nice thing about this is you can actually take an existing API controller. So I'm actually not going to use any special base classes here. I'll just add a vanilla empty web API controller. Let's call it cloud controller. And this is nice because with just a few lines of code, I can take an API controller that I already have and get these extra benefits of authentication and push. So I can sort of mobilize or Azureify my API controller.
Okay.
These are all trademarks.
Okay.
So let's go ahead and just add a getter here. And you know this is pretty much vanilla web API. Now I mentioned auth, so how do I get auth going here?
Well, so what, before we jump into that, what's the default? Is it just anonymous at the moment? Anyone can hit this?
That's a great question. The default is actually application key. So
okay.
when you deploy to the cloud and when you're running locally, the default is application key.
Excellent.
We do have a loophole when you're running on local hosts. So we'll pass through any traffic from local hosts to make local debugging very easy. But once you're in the cloud, by default, all the clients need application key, which is why you saw my downloaded client project had the application key ready. So the default hasn't changed between Node and .NET.
But it's probably something that people just need to be aware of, because it's you know, if you had an existing API controller and you brought it in like this, there would be no auth on that, because you know no one's gone and marked it up with the authorize attribute, which is used by standard web API.
By default, they'll get application key. Right.
No. Yeah, I'm saying, if you're not hosting in mobile services and you bring this code from your existing project, they may think that this perhaps is anonymous.
Right.
Then they deploy it and they hit it and it's like unauthorized. So
right.
So a distinction to be made there. Little gotcha maybe.
Yeah, absolutely. So by default, basically they have application key when you deploy anything to mobile services. By default, you have application key.
Yep.
Now, if you want to change that, for example, because application key is not really sort of an authentication mechanism, it doesn't tell you who the user is.
Right.
So we have a special attribute here, requires authorization. And we have to bring in our little namespace here. And then I have the different authorization levels that you might be familiar with from mobile services. Like you mentioned, application is the default. We'll pick user in this particular case. And now that what that tells mobile services is that whoever's trying to call this API needs to present a valid token that mobile services has issued after a successful login via one of our supported auth providers.
Okay.
Facebook, Twitter, Google, AAD. So as long as you've logged into one of those before you make this call, it'll pass through. So it's very nice. I took an API and just one line of code, I was actually able to add authentication to it.
Yep.
In the interest of time, I'm just going to skip over this. Let's say I was going to use Facebook. I put this attribute on here, and then in my web config, I actually have to specify for local debugging. I have to specify the Facebook app ID and app secret.
Okay.
And we already have these boilerplate settings here in web config, so I can just go and copy paste them here, and then I'll be able to try it out locally. When I go to the cloud, when I publish this app, these two settings get overridden in the cloud environment. So I'd have to go to the portal, go to the identity tab, and set the two properties there.
Okay.
But again, like in a matter of a few clicks and one line of code, you can have auth wired up.
Okay.
The other thing I mentioned was push notifications.
All right.
And like we talked in the beginning, we switched to Notification Hubs, which is significantly more scalable than the push engine we used to have before. So how do I leverage that from my API controller? It's extremely easy. We actually use dependency injection to give you this API services object, which is the thing I was inspecting earlier when I connected via remote debugging.
Okay.
So I can create a property of type API services. And I need to resolve this. And it needs to be, it can't be a field, I found out. It has to be a settable property because dependency injection needs that. And then API services is actually a really interesting object to look at. The key thing we're going to focus on is the push client that we have, so which lets you talk to notification hubs. The other interesting thing is the log property, which I actually was using earlier to write log entries. And this actually writes straight through to the web API logging infrastructure that already exists. We've just kind of elevated it here to make it a little bit more convenient.
Okay.
And then the rest of the things you'll see is properties, settings, config. These are kind of configuration information about your mobile service.
All right.
So for now, let's focus on push. I can very easily write something like services.push.sendAsync and kind of specify my payload and go ahead and start sending push notifications to all the clients that are connected to my mobile service. So kind of a very, very easy way to add push to an existing API as well.
Is there any change in the registration piece for the client to register, their channel?
No, the registration is the same. So okay. This is, I don't know if everybody's familiar with this new feature. So as with Fish Notification Hubs, the way you now register the channel in the client SDK is changed. You no longer use the Notification Hub SDK. Mm-hmm. There's actually a register method straight in the Mobile Services SDK, so you don't have to bring both. And that call is exactly the same.
Yep.
So
excellent.
Register your client.
Great.
That's all I had.
Cool. Certainly some interesting features there. So we saw .NET backend, in this case C#. Sorry, Chris.
Oh, no.
We saw the new table controller. Mm-hmm. We saw entity data, which your data objects need to inherit from. We saw
NoSQL storage.
NoSQL storage, yes. We saw the domain manager concept and AutoMapper. Mm-hmm. What else did we see?
We auth and push, bringing an existing API and being able to very easily add authentication and push notifications to it.
Excellent.
Awesome stuff. Well, thanks so much for coming on. I'm sure people are going to be really excited to dive in and play with this stuff. Do you have a Twitter handle you want to share with people so they can?
My Twitter handle is TheYavor.
TheYavor. Well, TheYavor. That's nice.
I'm bringing the 1990s back.
That's perfect. Excellent. All right. Well, thanks, everybody, for watching. Please make sure you follow us at the Cloud Cover Show, and we'll see you next time.